Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 25th, 2016. Ban Ki-moon is in South Sudan meeting President Kiir after attack on a UN camp in Malakal.
My message to the leaders of South Sudan is clear. Put peace above politics. Pursue compromise, overcome obstacles, establish the transitional government of national unity.
And residents of Pibor witness a second day of deadly fighting between factions in Buma State. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Juba, where the United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke this past hour in the capital shortly after emerging from a one-hour meeting with South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. Ban says despite the hopefulness of the South Sudanese people after declaring their independence, the nightmare has returned to the country with a vengeance.
The people of this land suffered decades of bloody civil war. Yet over the last 2 years, the nightmare has returned with a vengeance. Killings, rape, children forced into becoming soldiers, massive human rights violations, and epic corruption.
The top UN diplomat says implementing the peace deal is the only way to stop the suffering.
I'm encouraged by the proposed compromise on implementing security arrangements for Juba. My message to the leaders of South Sudan is clear. Put peace above politics. Pursue compromise. Overcome obstacles. Establish the transitional government of national unity.
The UN Secretary General pledged $21 million from the United Nations Reserve Funds to help implement South Sudan's peace plan, including forming a transitional government of national unity. Barnaba Marial, South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation, says the meeting between Ban Ki-moon and President Kiir focused on peace implementation.
And the President assured him of his commitment to implement this agreement. Secondly, the Secretary General also assured His Excellency the President that he will urge Riek Machar to come as soon as possible, so that the government, the transitional government of national unity, can be formed. They also touch on the humanitarian issues, and which the President assured the Secretary General that all the humanitarian agencies are all being given free access to deliver food in all the areas of South Sudan that need relief.
Marial says the UN chief and President Kiir also discussed relations between UNMISS and the government of South Sudan, particularly on the protection of civilians. Marial says the two leaders also discussed recent attacks on protection of civilian sites in Malakal that left 18 people dead, including two MSF workers. He says the government will carry out its investigation, while the UN peacekeepers will likely carry out their own investigation. Mr. Ban said the people of South Sudan cannot continue to live in protection of civilian camps and have been betrayed by the people who want power in their country. Philip Tonaleu prepared that report from Juba. South Sudanese analyst says the Secretary General's visit should speed efforts to implement the peace deal. A Juba University professor says Ban's visit underscores the worsening security situation in Malakal, Wau, and Yambio. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Jock Madud Jock, professor of anthropology at Juba University, says Ban Ki-moon's visit will help draw the attention of the international community to the serious humanitarian crisis threatening families in South Sudan. Jock says the international community needs to act to avert a looming disaster.
Now that the country is in a mess with a lot of humanitarian issues, with close to 4 million people at the risk of disastrous food deficits, the coming of Ban Ki-moon is important in highlighting that level of hunger in this country. The security situation is also dire with the recent clashes in Malakal and the burning of the camp and the killing of 18 people, the recent conflict in Wau, the conflict ongoing in Western Equatoria.
Jacob Chol, head of the Political Science Department at the University of Juba, agrees. Chol says Ban's visit will pressure the warring parties to quickly agree on outstanding issues blocking implementation of the peace agreement.
It will be able to help to strengthen and to engage the parties, especially the ASPLM and the government, by ensuring that they have to do what they could to be able to ensure that the first vice president arrives to the country when security arrangements have been put in place.
Earlier this month, international aid agencies warned that South Sudan was facing unprecedented levels of food insecurity, with more than 3 million people, nearly 25% of the country's population, in urgent need of food assistance. The agencies blamed the conflict and the lack of progress on implementing the peace deal for the widespread food insecurity across South Sudan. This marks the second time Ban is visiting Juba since the conflict broke out in December 2013. Jock says while people welcome Ban's visit, the country's problems must be solved by South Sudanese.
The solution of South Sudan's problem will come from South Sudanese themselves. Not just the leaders, but also from all of us as citizens of this country. Each one of us is definitely challenged to do their part in the coming of peace, whether through our discussions as citizens among ourselves, whether reconciliation between communities.
Jock says implementing the peace deal is key to silencing the guns, which he says will allow South Sudanese to reconcile and build the trust among the communities affected by the 2 years of violence in many parts of the country. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Government employees in the newly created Wau State are complaining about delays in the payment of their salaries. Some of the employees say they are unable to feed their families and pay their children's school fees. The State Finance Ministry admits it has not paid employees for some time. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Wau.
Wau State employees say life has been hard because the government has not yet paid their December and January salaries. The state government employees say they are unable to provide food for their families. A couple of employees speaking in Arabic who were willing to have their voices recorded but did not want to be identified for fear of reprisal from the authorities say they have little to live on.
Unclassified employees who are only paid 200 South Sudanese pounds are really suffering because the little amount they get is not enough. And how can they survive on December salary they didn't give them during the Christmas celebration?
People were paid November and December salaries before Christmas, and people expected to be paid their January salary on time. But unfortunately, the 2 months have ended without any payment. The living conditions have become very difficult.
Our situation as a mothers are very difficult. The market, everything is very expensive. Our people are just suffering by the God's mercy. We spent 2 months without receiving any payment. People are suffering to get only 1 meal per day, which is very dangerous.
Catherine Carlo, who works for the State Ministry of Physical Infrastructure, says the delay in paying employees' salaries is particularly hurting many widows like her.
There is a single mother and they don't have any other business. They are just relying on government money. So the kids are suffering and they have to go to school.
The State Finance Ministry officials in Wau admit it has not paid employees for the last 2 months. They are calling on employees to be patient. Clement Agamiri, the Acting Director General for the State Ministry of Finance, says the delay was caused by a recent decision to introduce a new salary structure for employees. Speaking in Arabic, he says the government hopes to pay the salaries next week.
I have received details of the salaries of wild state employees from the National Ministry of Finance, and they have given the detail to the new minister, and hopefully, by the end of this week, we would have finished with the process of transfer and will be able to pay all employees.
Agamiri says the decision to create more estates has also affected internal financial transfers, but says the finance ministry is working to devise a quicker means of payment for employees.
The delay is caused by the formation of new 28 states, issued by President Salva Kiir Mayardit. But our colleagues at the National Finance Ministry are making necessary adjustments on the budget to cater for the new states and counties.
The governor of Wau State told reporters Monday that former officials of Western Baal Gasal looted the state's treasury. Elias Waya Nyipoch alleged the former governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan and finance minister Lilian Valentino Rizik for emptying the state's treasury. The two former officials denied stealing money from the state. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
At a swearing ceremony for officials in the newly created Jonglei State, Governor Colonel Philip Aguer called on his new officials to promote peace and unity among citizens. Aguer also vowed that his government will improve education and create new projects that will provide income for citizens who are now living as IDPs in other areas. Jacob Achiek has this report from Bor.
Relatives and friends of the new state official clap as their loved one are sworn in at the State Council of Ministers held in Bor. Governor Philip Aguer told officials to prioritize roads, security and education in their annual budgets.
Our key priorities in finance is to mobilize resources for security and road. These are the key priorities. I think there are a lot of priorities in education, but for me, thinking of our children to come back from diaspora and from refugees from displaced camp, I would like the Minister of Education to concentrate on key boarding schools.
The new Minister of Education, Susan Lisa Luong, says she will work with humanitarian agencies to promote education across the state.
My ministry will involve rehabilitation center for the street children. This is to prevent those children growing in the crime. And this initiative involves the partners such as UNICEF, Save the Children, Child Fund, and CARE International. The ministry shall create awareness to avoid child abuse and forced marriage to young girls who are still at the age of 14 to 15 years.
Deputy Governor Peter Wall, as you said, the new state government will reconstruct public institutions destroyed during the fighting and deliver services to residents. Finance Minister Ayom Manjok promised to set up a program to provide employment to the state youth and generate revenue for the government.
I will work in hand with you and the rest of my colleagues, the ministers, and I will provide you with the program of the ministry. As I know very well, at the Ministry of Finance, the main duty of the ministry is to control and to generate revenue for the state, for the development of the people of Jonglei State.
Today, Governor Aguer appointed Ding Akol, the advisor of economic affairs, John Amor, called technical advisor for physical infrastructure, and Lan Savey, James Akejian, minister for physical infrastructure, Angong Gordon called the Minister of Health and Environment, and Mayanangor Atim as Minister for Agriculture and Forestry. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, officials in South Sudan train prison inmates. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you smile?
What makes me to smile is that whenever I am happy, I must express my feeling in terms of smiling.
When I see my friend is happy. And if he or she doesn't have any problem, I always do feel happy and I will smile. It is also an answer for him to know that I'm happy because of his or her situation.
What makes me smile is, when there's something so funny, when there's some funny things happening, amused you, actually, you need to smile.
Something funny. When I hear something funny, yeah, that's it.
I'm just a joyful person, and mostly what makes me smile is if what I am doing has given me an achievement.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Prison authorities in South Sudan are restoring vocational training for inmates in the country's prisons. Acting Minister of Interior and Wildlife, Achuel Tito Madut, says providing inmates with vocational skills like carpentry, masonry and bricklaying will help former criminals to reform and become productive citizens of the society once they leave the prison. Mungume Davis Rakarinj reports for VOA from Juba.
Trainer Yengi Julius Logule conducts a bricklaying and construction class for roughly 30 students at Juba Central Prison. 90 prison wardens and 135 convicts are undergoing training in various vocational skills, including carpentry, masonry, metal fabrication, auto mechanics, and electro wiring and installation. Prison warden First Lieutenant Sebit Abdallah is one of the trainees. Once Abdallah finishes his training, he will train others. Speaking in Arabic, Abdallah says he will also build furniture, which he will sell to earn extra income to support his wife and three children.
My current salary is very little for me. It is completely not enough for me. It cannot enable me to provide food, school fees, or pay medical bills. I am glad that I will now be able to complement my salary.
Abdallah earns 1,500 South Sudanese pounds per month, which equals $40. He says he's happy to be learning carpentry. He will spend at least 3 months studying with 19-year-old inmate Lang Lek Deng.
This training is very important for me because when I leave here, I'll be able to do furniture like doors, windows, tables, and be able to earn a living. In the future, I'll be able to have a wife, establish a family, and have children.
Deng has served 6 months of his 2-year sentence for battering and assaulting a neighbor during a drinking spree. He says he hopes to leave the prison a reformed man. Trainer Yengi Julius Logule says the training has long-term benefits for the inmates.
Once they have something to do, it will reduce on crime rate, because idle mind is the devil's workshop. So once they have something to do, they will have to get their own income, and they may not, some of them have stealing issues, so that one will come to an end.
Achuel Tito Madut is the acting minister of Interior and Wildlife. He says former convicts have a role to play in nation building.
There are so many crimes as a result of the breakdown of rule of law in the country. And with this big population, it is pertinent that the country looks into empowering them so that when they are released, they are useful in the society.
He says the program will be rolled out into other parts of the country. There are some 6,000 South Sudanese inmates in prisons across the country. The vocational skills training program is being sponsored by the United Nations Development Program, or UNDP. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Rights groups, Amnesty International, is denouncing the high price paid by populations in West and Central Africa in the fight against terrorism. In its annual global report, the group also emphasized there has been some progress in the region regarding human rights. Emily Yob reports.
Amnesty International says populations in West and Central Africa have suffered directly from the fight against terrorism. In Cameroon, Niger, Chad and Nigeria, entire towns have sometimes been caught in a crossfire between government forces and Boko Haram militants, resulting in hundreds of deaths. People in those countries also feel the effects of anti-terrorism laws, such as the one passed in Cameroon in 2014 that gives extra power to authorities and has led to arbitrary detentions, notably of human rights activists, children and journalists.
Les gouvernements doivent impérativement répondre à cette menace de manière adéquate.
Speaking at the regional launch in Ivory Coast, West and Central Africa's campaign deputy director Samira Daoud said that it is imperative that governments fight terrorism adequately by protecting the population and certainly not by sacrificing freedom and the lives of some communities, she said. But the organization also highlighted progress for human rights in the region.
Au Togo, la torture est devenue une infraction pénale. En Côte d'Ivoire,
in Togo, torture has been criminalized, Daoud said. Also, Ivory Coast has abolished the death penalty, which is extraordinary progress for the region, she added, also mentioning some progress in Mauritania, with slavery now considered a crime against humanity. With regard to international justice, Daoud said the organization of the trial of former Chadian leader Issa Nabre in Senegal was a step in the right direction, but expressed concerns over the growing criticism of the International Criminal Court, or ICC, by a certain number of African countries. She said that Amnesty considered the ICC to be the court of last resort.
On peut être crédible dans la critique à l'égard de la Cour pénale internationale.
One can be credible in criticizing the ICC if one is capable on a national or regional level to fight impunity, she said. It is fundamental that justice be done wherever that is. Regarding the future, Daoud said Amnesty hopes to make progress with Burkina Faso on eliminating the death penalty and ending forced child marriage. Emilia for VOA News in Abidjan.
A recently published report on maternal deaths in Kenya said a majority of expectant mothers die in hospitals at night, during weekends and during public holidays when doctors are away. The report reveals that junior medical staffs are on duty but lack the expertise to handle emergency cases. Muhammad Yusuf reports from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Irene Akala lost her sister in a public hospital in Western Kenya late last year. Her sister Elizabeth, a mother of two, was in the final days of her pregnancy. Akala says her sister started feeling ill 3 days before she was admitted to the government-owned hospital.
Come to my ultrasound. Ultrasound says I'm daily revealed. Mtoto amefariki.
She says ultrasound revealed the child had died in the womb. Then she was transferred to Kakamega General Hospital. She says the doctor wrote a note saying her sister's case was an emergency. We got there around 5 p.m. in the evening. They conducted some tests, and then the doctor said it was late and he was leaving work and will attend to her the next day. In the morning, Akala says several doctors attended to Elizabeth, but weren't able to save her life. Akala says that in her sister's last moments, she started bleeding from the mouth. And it looked like the pain has gone. She says Elizabeth was at ease and quiet, not screaming. Then she died, suddenly, without delivering her dead baby. When darkness sets in Kenyan hospitals, many expectant mothers rarely receive proper care. According to a new survey titled Maternal Death Surveillance and Response 2013-2015, Dr. Matthias Akech, a gynecologist, says these are the hours when there will be mothers pass away.
The most thing that was striking is that most of these deaths were occurring outside office hours, that is after 5 and before 8, on weekends and on public holidays. During the time, we find that the senior doctors are not in the hospital. So the people who attend to these patients who are dying are relatively junior doctors.
A separate report published last month in the medical journal, The Lancet, says an estimated 2.6 million women die in childbirth each year, with 98% occurring in low-income and middle-income countries. Dr. Akech says Kenya's public hospitals need to have more medical staff and supplies to end the suffering of women in their care.
Senior people should be available to take care of these women, but that is a problem that the country is generally facing of staffing in those facilities. The other thing that also came out very clearly is that even after the diagnosis was correctly made, the resuscitation in most cases was inadequate due to the shortfall of supplies.
When President Uhuru Kenyatta came to power in 2013, he ordered all the public hospitals to provide free service to expectant mothers when delivering. But some hospitals have threatened to stop providing the free services and start charging women. after the government failed to cover the hospital's costs. Some hospital officials say the $25 paid by the government to compensate the hospitals for providing free maternity care is not enough. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon spoke this past hour in the capital, Juba, shortly after emerging from a meeting with South Sudan President Salva Kiir to say despite the hopefulness of the South Sudanese people after declaring their independence, the nightmare has returned to the country with a vengeance. The Secretary General said, quote, the people of this land suffered decades of civil war, yet over the last 2 years, the nightmare has returned. Killings, rapes, children forced into becoming soldiers, massive human rights violations, and epic corruption. End quote. Mr. Ban says implementing the peace deal is the only way to stop the suffering. He said his message to the leaders of South Sudan was clear: put peace above politics and establish the transitional government of national unity. The Secretary General pledged $21 million from United Nations reserve funds to help implement South Sudan's peace plan, including forming a transitional government. Barnaba Mariel, South Sudan's Minister of Foreign Affairs, says the meeting between Ban and President Kiir focused on peace implementation. At a swearing-in ceremony for officials in the newly created Jonglei State, Governor Philip Aguirre called on the officials to promote peace and unity among citizens. Aguirre vowed that his government will improve education and create new projects that will provide income for citizens who are now living as IDPs in other areas. Relatives and friends of the new officials clapped as their loved ones were sworn in at the State Council of Ministers Hall in Bor. Aguirre told the officials to prioritize roads, security, and education in their annual budgets. Education Minister Susan Lith-Aluong says she will work with humanitarian agencies to promote education across the state. And finally, government employees in the new state of Wau are complaining about delays in the payment of their salaries. Some employees say they are unable to feed their families and pay their children's school fees. The state finance ministry admits it has not paid employees for months. For the last 2 months, state employees here say life has been hard because the government hasn't paid their salaries and they're unable to put bread on the table. A couple of employees who did not want to be identified for fear of reprisals say they have little to live on. One worker said unclassified employees who are paid only 200 South Sudanese pounds are really suffering because the little amount they get is not enough. State finance ministry officials in Wau admit it has not paid employees for 2 months, but says they're calling on employees to be patient. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Nani Ongere by Colonel Mido. Nani Ongere.
Nani olotir, nani olongere mama.
We have been listening to Colonel Mido with that song, Nani Ongere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.